Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20 and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Chicken in the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken, Petaluma never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
And there you go, Norman Greenbaum. He is doing so well. Saw him a couple times recently. That is, of course, Norman's song, Petaluma. How many eggs does a chicken lay, you know? About one every 28 hours, you know, whether they have to or not. Anyway, a couple of things I want to talk about before I introduce our guest. And I've noticed something really curious the last maybe week or two. My cat... Three of my cats, actually, sadly lost the fourth a couple days ago by Kona. They've suddenly started eating at least twice as much as they usually eat. One in particular, Harlequin, has been, I mean, I think she's gone to like, you know, a little cup of kibble in the morning and a little cup of kibble at night to like, where's my kibble? 4 or 5 times a day. She is like eating for the coming flood or something. So I went over and to a pet store and asked about it, and they said, yes, you will notice your cats, you will notice your animals in general eating more right now. They know fall is coming. And I don't know if there's a particularly marked difference because we're going to come into a heavy winter or not, but I just noticed it, and I noticed it more than I've noticed it any other year before. So if you've noticed your animals bugging you for food more often, that could be why. And then I also have to say, what a glorious harvest it is right now. I had lunch with my best friends, Jim and John, and they came to pick me up bearing such beautiful gifts from their little farm about a mile from my house. A huge basket of heirloom tomatoes, a huge bag of cherry tomatoes, another big bag of lemon cucumbers, a very large bag of Gravensteins that they picked today, and a whole lot of lemon cucumbers. And it's just, oh God, it's just such a great time in Sonoma County and in the North Bay. So I hope you're enjoying it. I hope you're getting out to farmers markets, farm stands, your own garden, perhaps. I've given up. I don't think I'm ever going to plant another tomato ever, because every time I go out to pick my tomatoes, you know, I'll see it at night. It's like, oh, it's going to be perfect tomorrow. They're gone. And it looks like it's deer. So no more tomatoes for me. I'll just get them from my friends and spend money at the farmer's market. And on that note, we are going to talk to somebody intimately involved with farmers. It is Tim Page from Feed, F-E-E-D, Sonoma, Farmers Exchange of Earthly Delights, which is such a great name. Welcome to Mouthful.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you're the co-founder?
Yes. Well, in all honesty, actually, Feed Sonoma is the continuation of a business that has been in continuous operation since 1979.
You just anticipated my next question.
Yeah. So, I've kind of so to speak, been the steward or kind of been at the helm the last little over 4 years, June 1st, 2011. But yeah, it's fantastic because it's such a community-based organization, but also that it does have these roots that are truly the, you know, really powerful foundation for the food system.
And what was it, and what was it called back then?
It first started off a woman named Ina Chun.
Oh, Ina Chun, yes.
Yeah, and it was Ocean Resources International or something crazy like that, which I still haven't had the pleasure of meeting her. We've tried to get together via the previous owner when it was Terra Sonoma Produce.
Mm-hmm.
Her name's Susan Stover, but we couldn't quite make it happen. But yeah, I'd love to hear that story. I mean, I've been told kind of the rumors of back in the day where they, you know, it started in 79, so we're talking about connecting with the folks that were just kind of making a point of supporting local small family farms like Alice Waters and Bob Klein and that whole scene out down in the Bay Area.
Well, there were some here, too, that were sort of sleepers. I mean, when I moved here as a young child in 1972, I mean, the first thing that I did, I was shopping at a couple of farm stands. And one of the farm stands I went to, it changed hands two or three times, but it was a local farm stand. I got milk from Miller's Drive-In Dairy, drove over to Sonoma to the cheese factory. So you could do that, but it wasn't really off the grid, but it wasn't the norm.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's what's so unique about in these types of areas, you know, in the North Bay and Sonoma County. I mean, you have the ability, one, to have the most beautiful heirloom quality food on the planet. You know, there's lots of best growing regions on the planet, but this is surely one of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, it also does have the opportunity to start in that kind of grassroots ability where back in the day, Ina, they would gather the produce under an oak tree on a Thursday afternoon and then load up the truck and drive down on Thursday night and drop it off at all the restaurants. You know, they had keys, they'd walk in the back door. So, I mean, you know, bringing the farms together and bringing them together with the chefs and the folks that want to support them. But, you know, sometimes you just got to do what you can do to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. And so it went from Ocean Resources to Terra Sonoma.
Terra Sonoma Produce. And then that was the second version.
Mm-hmm.
They were actually, Tony and Susan were farming one of the farms that Ina worked with.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just basically took over the operation. And then
and that was almost exclusively to restaurants, wasn't it?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I would say probably 95% of the clientele.
I think I used them a few times back when I was a working chef.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, and then Susan and Tony just basically looking to transition, as we all do, you know, at certain points where it's like, okay, kind of done with that gig for a minute. And so they were in the process of trying to find some new owners for Terra Sonoma.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend Michelle Dubin and I had talked about kind of getting something rolling to help out local farms sell more food, basically, and kind of found out about that business being for sale. And that's kind of just happened to kind of land in the perfect spot. It's really nice.
And you're based in the Barlow?
Yep, in the Barlow in Sebastopol. Mm-hmm. And that is, it's really exciting because we're actually expanding the warehouse there, where we're going to be adding more cold storage and more square footage to accommodate, you know, the demand, not only from the buyers wanting to have more access, but also, as you would want to see happen when you're kind of growing a food system, there's more farms showing up as well.
Yes.
So,
and did you get your refrigerated truck?
Yes, we did. Thanks for bringing that up. That was a fun little campaign that we did last year.
Yeah,
and that was truck number 3, and we're able to make that happen. And I mean, now we're at the point of kind of finding the sweet spot as you kind of, when you work in these types of regions where you have a lot of small farms, you're not necessarily going to grow a food system by economies of scale, you know, where you'd have all of a sudden huge farms. There's always going to be lots of small farms here because of the cost of land and topography and all those factors. And so ultimately what's most likely going to make sense is having these micro hubs, if you will, like what Feed is right now in Sebastopol.
Mm-hmm.
And really in a couple of years, that could just be one of many of those micro hubs around the county, really. I mean, you could have one in Healdsburg and Sonoma Valley. You could have one in Petaluma, and then maybe a central operation that just makes it more efficient. So,
now, who are your primary customers?
It still is, majority is restaurants.
Okay.
And we do currently work with folks in Marin, East Bay, San Francisco, Sonoma County, and then we do drive a truck once a week out to the Napa Valley. But I would say, from the total number of clients that we work with, we're on average per week, we're delivering produce to about 75 to 80 different locations.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say of those 80, let's say probably maybe 80% are restaurants and maybe 15% markets and 5% caters, but all wholesale. Yeah,
all wholesale. Okay, so you don't do any retail?
No, we do not.
Okay. When you work with small farms, chefs, everybody needs to be flexible because you're not going to get, say, a pallet of something, well, except zucchini. But you're not going to get a pallet. Yeah. So are restaurants able to be as flexible as they give us the impression they are?
Well, yeah. I would say that like anything in life, there's you can't make everybody happy, first of all. Second of all, I definitely would agree or would give a positive affirmation to that question as far as that, yes, everybody that chooses to support local farm, small farm food systems is not only choosing to be flexible because you're looking to kind of build vitality in the ground that you walk upon, of course. But yeah, it's also, it's a more expensive venture too. And so generally when you have folks that are showing up every week to make that point of supporting small farms, they're doing it for many, many reasons on many, many levels. But also within that food system, there's flexibility all across the board, you know, because it also comes, the farms are going to be asked to be flexible by developing their crop planning, of course, according to what they feel might sell, which is coming from the buyers. And now the buyers, of course, are also asked to be flexible based on what is actually available and the consistency that sometimes isn't always there with small farm food systems. And then the same thing with feed. It's a very human business, if you will, for lack of a better word. But if you have like farm to table movement, you have feed kind of in the middle, kind of like this connector. And so obviously on our part too, it's like everybody's asked to be flexible, not only with expecting the unexpected, but also in kind of committing a little bit further with the effort.
Have you noticed any ripples of cynicism about the farm-to-table movement, any growing cynicism about it? And I asked for a specific reason.
Okay.
So I'm just wondering if you're seeing that.
Oh, you're going to keep that
I'll tell you. I'll keep the restaurant secret.
Perfect.
But I was listening to some people who own a restaurant within this wonderful North Bay area. And I was really quite shocked to hear to see the eyes roll about farm to table and the conversation about getting so much of their produce from Costco. And it's a fairly small place with a very high end menu. And I was shocked. I was shocked at the cynicism about it. And, you know, like, I don't need, you know, 10 baskets of cherry tomatoes. I need cherry tomatoes every week. And I was very, very surprised because it's really a sweet, intimate place. I thought, God, is there this new growing cynicism that I've missed? So that's why I ask if you've seen any of that happening.
Yeah, no, it's a fair question for sure. Because I mean, personally, of course, now that I have been working with feed for the last 4 years, I notice a lot of that stuff myself, of course. Like, all of a sudden now I'm noticing, like, refrigerated trucks driving down the road. Like, oh, who's that?
Sure.
Or, you know, I do notice people taking food into the back door of a restaurant, and obviously if it's coming out of the back of a certain car, and you can tell that it's from Costco, and I think the same thing. But ultimately, I think that, and this, once again, like, you're not expressing either, it's not a judgment at all, but it's, I think that we just live in a society where we have come to expect things, and that also affects the amount of effort that we might want to put in at certain times. And that's not a judgment, because we all have reasons why things are happening. But ultimately, because we know that we have an amazing community here of farms. We have an amazing community of people that are supporting the farm, chefs, you know, the markets, the farm markets, the individuals that show up. We also, I don't know that there's an exact study that's been done, but there's enough that show the numbers. But probably less than 10% of the food that's purchased in Sonoma County is grown in Sonoma County.
Which I find just so shocking. But
so,
yeah.
And it's one of those things where, of course, I'm bringing it up. I can't be quoted on that per se.
But that's been going around for a while.
Yeah, it's fairly verified through various studies.
Sure.
And in knowing that, we're at the tip of the iceberg, which is amazing. I mean, it's exciting. But so the reason I'm bringing that up is because in the face of cynicism or judgment or whatever it might be, oh, you're the middleman, or, you know, that type of information that could be perceived negative, there is so much positive work to be done that I find that if we all just spend a little time focusing on the next yes moment, I think we could find ourselves being quite effective in a short amount of time. And that's what we've noticed at Feed, you know, in our farming community. All of us are choosing to say yes to, yeah, we're going to work our you-know-what's off. You know, it's part of that flexibility. Well, we have to be flexible in that regard, too. We have to be in shape, basically, to show up like that. And so, yeah, it's fine. I can take things personally like anybody can, but I think that ultimately there's so much work to be done that I have no problem just like, okay, on to the next thing.
I completely agree with you. Yeah. I was just curious if there'd been much of that.
Yeah, I mean, we see it for sure. Uh-huh. Yeah, but I wouldn't say, I mean, maybe because we do get to work with such an amazing community of farmers and chefs that, maybe we're just insulated to a certain extent.
But because, maybe my experience was a really isolated one.
Yeah.
You know?
Let's hope
That's
so.
What I'd like to hope. Yes.
Let's hope
absolutely.
So.
How about we're going to hear a little bit of music, and we'll be right back with more Talk with Tim Page.
I've been wrong before, and I'll be there again. I don't have any answers, my friend, just this pile of old questions my memory left me here in the field of opportunity. It's plowing time again. I'm going back to my house, but I'm not going now. It's too early to be leaving here somehow. Let me bore you with this story, how my lover led me down. Well, I borrow seeds of sadness from the ground. In the field of opportunity, it's plowing time again. There ain't no way of telling where these seeds will rise or win. I'll just wait springtime, and then I'll find a friend. In the field of opportunity, it's plowing time again. Those headlights coming down the hill between the stars. In the field of opportunity, it's plowing time again. There ain't no way of telling where these seeds will rise or when. I'll just wait around till springtime, then I'll find a friend. In the field of
bake sale.
Neil Young always sounds good. Okay, we're talking with Tim Page, talking about Feed Sonoma, Farmers Exchange of Earthly Delights. Tell me about the name.
I guess as I like to turn short stories into long ones, I'll try to keep it in a nutshell.
No, that's okay. You don't have to.
But
it's public radio.
Right
we
on.
Can tell long
oh,
stories.
Oh, yeah, cool. But anyway, I mean, I do have a bit of a background as far as being in the business world, and I worked in the stock market for like 12 years as an institutional stockbroker. You know, first job out of college was at Montgomery Securities back in the early 90s, and you know, Transamerica Building, you know, definitely wet behind the ears and clueless, and yeah, I just had that experience of, for whatever reason, being a middle child, you know, and that whole scene, I've always loved being kind of bringing people together, like kind of being in the middle there and making everybody happy. That's like been one of my major missions in life for some reason. But anyway, and then, yeah, just being kind of, so the Farmers Exchange is literally meant to be that, the idea of creating an actual exchange where we can have access to information from the farms based on not only what is in the field, but particularly how many cases they might have, you know, because our goal as an organization is to allow a farm to sell everything that they can harvest on any given day. Are we achieving that now? No, I mean, of course not. But that's the goal. So literally creating this online exchange, because I do feel like even if you only knew that there was, let's say, three cases of these amazing heirloom Romano beans available out there, even just putting that there, I personally feel that wouldn't turn people away as like, oh, if I can't get those, I'm not going to place an order. I feel like that's an excellent way to let people know that this type of agriculture can be a limited edition and deserves to be honored in that regard. And then the Earthly Delights is simply kind of meant to honor the fact that agriculture in these areas can be many faceted, whether it's right now produce, you know, fruit, vegetables, basically, but there's also medicinal plants, and there's, you know, could be at some point dye plants, for instance, with a lot of the work that's happening with Rebecca Burgess at the Fiber Shed.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, anyway, so there's that multifaceted aspect, and then just somehow tuning into a novel, The Oranges of Hieronymus Bosch, and there's a painting on the cover that's The Garden of Earthly Delights.
Yes, so, okay.
Yeah, there
you go. Cool. Do you deal with ranches at all, or you know, only with produce?
Yeah, we have done special missions with ranches in the past. It's not necessarily not meant to be our focus, simply because right now, even though I can't tell you how many times we have had ranchers, meat farmers, you know, kind of ask us, when are you going to do for meat what you do for vegetables? And of course, I would love to do that. I would love to make that happen. That's the whole point. But also from an infrastructure standpoint and simply paying the bills to make that happen, it's something that we cannot embark upon. And I have heard rumors that a local company here that is involved with small farm meat is potentially already having something in motion with allowing local meat to get to restaurants and stuff. So maybe that could be a future show for you.
Is Sonoma County Meat Company doing some of that? I mean,
yeah, that's basically who I was talking about.
Okay, so yeah, and them on. Yeah. And they've made it. I know that the Williams from Williams Ranches, you know, they work so hard and do such a good job. And I'm sad they're not at the farmer's market. They now sell everything through Sonoma County Meat Company.
Nice.
And it's made it so much easier for them.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Ryan and Janine are doing some really amazing work, not only producing, you know, value-added meat right there at their butcher shop, but also, as you know, in any one of these small farm communities, that efficiency piece of allowing ease of aggregation and distribution is extremely important if we're going to steward the food system into the next generation.
Yeah, and there's so many things that you couldn't get before. I mean, the fact that you can buy cow fat is just amazing.
Nice.
Well,
yeah.
I was writing a book at the time that cow fat suddenly became available retail. I was writing a book on meatballs. It's a long story, but it's like, I can be the first person out of the gate with a book that includes cow fat, which is the original way that meatballs were made over 2,000 years ago.
Yeah, for sure.
And I can, and it's not crazy. I don't. Well, get all your neighbors together and go buy 25 pounds of cow fat from the distributor. You can now get, you know, 8 ounces for $4.
Yeah. Well, of course, I'm going to take that little tidbit and kind of run on a little segue. But it's, I mean, basically, that's the other aspect of creating a truly sustainable food system in these types of micro regions as well, is that you're going to have available amazing produce or meat or whatever it might be that could be super rare because of the cost of land here. It means you're going to find more heirlooms being grown because generally they can yield more dollars per row foot, so that helps pay the bills. But also the other aspect of it, and I mean, I think you can look to indigenous cultures around the world for this one, but I mean, developing, I know you can picture this in your eyes, but if developing a sustainable, truly local year-round food system here, can you imagine what amazing food you're going to be eating? If knowing that the farms that you know already, what they grow, and if that was the basis of your food system, I mean, it's pretty obvious that that's a goal worth creating.
Yeah, and it's really how I've lived not 100%, but to a pretty large degree since I've lived here. I mean, that's one of the reasons I wanted to live here. And if you're lucky enough to work at home like I do, you know, and write about this sort of thing, it's not that hard to do.
Yeah.
You know, if you shop at farmers markets primarily, and you can do that now for almost everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's just easy. Like the story you were telling earlier about the cynicism, you know, you have a choice. You can make it.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, for sure. It's challenging. You know, I don't think there are that many people that could truly probably buy all of their food from local farms because it is exorbitant to a certain extent in price and a lot of things. But also, I think that we can make choices to support that in a way that allows it to evolve into that next step so that it is achievable by all.
Yeah, and I think the hardest part is the shift. Mm-hmm. Making the shift from your usual habits to something different is, you know, that can be a pretty big hurdle to cross. But once you do, you know, and you get into the rhythm of it, and you start preserving, you start freezing, that sort of thing. But moving on, how is it that you work with farms? I know on your website you have the list of farms that you're connected with.
Which is incomplete currently. It needs to be updated, but, we only have so many hours in the day.
Exactly. all of our websites need to be updated.
Yeah, totally.
So how is it that you work? Do farmers bring things to you? Do you go there? Do you harvest? Do the farmers harvest? What's going on?
Yeah, good question. So I'll tell you first off, like back when I was telling you about my friend Michelle Dubin and I getting together and kind of trying to vision a business that could be created. And the whole idea was, let's get a truck and take it around to all the farms, pick up all the produce. And basically that was the idea. Let's get a truck, pick up the food and sell it.
Yeah.
And I think that once you actually, you know, put your foot in the door and start doing the work, you realize that inherently takes quite a sophisticated infrastructure that may not be achievable at the outset. So anyhow, but the present tense situation is that we, on average right now, like for instance, we are kind of orchestrating, if you will, we're part of the orchestration of harvest twice a week. So there's a Monday harvest that facilitates Tuesday and Wednesday. We have a Wednesday delivery out to Napa now. So there's a Monday harvest with all the farms that facilitates Tuesday and Wednesday deliveries. There's a Thursday harvest that facilitates the Friday deliveries. And right now we're averaging about 40 farms per harvest. And so basically, I would say out of those 40 farms, probably I think 75% deliver to feed.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, maybe 32 farms, and the rest we do pick up from. And I, as much as we would like to be able to grow with the food system and start working with more clients on the buy side as far as like getting another truck and then being able to give access to more folks, we also would like to add a second truck to our pickup routes so that we do start facilitating more pickups from the farms. Because ultimately, as we kind of hinted at earlier, feed also is about creating efficiency that allows the art form to happen. So it allows farmers to focus on being farmers if that's what they want to do.
Sure.
It allows chefs to focus on cooking if that's what they want to do. I mean, obviously, there's always going to be those direct connections, and we don't want to get in the way of those. Like if there's chefs that want to deal only directly with the farms, then that's a choice. But from our purview, we are being asked to create as efficient a model as possible. And from an efficiency standpoint, there's this one point of aggregation and one point of distribution. And then you also need to create that with a very transparent model so that you can begin to create a sense of community ownership from all the players at stake.
Now, and then all the restaurants, all of the people that you sell to, let's say, they all get deliveries. Does anyone come to you?
No, we have folks that pick up.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah, we do have folks that pick up directly at our warehouse in the Barlow. And I do envision that type of service growing more in the future
People have talked about wanting to have that, to the effect of the wholesale market San Francisco. And I've always wondered, I mean, I've been in countless meetings about is that possible? Why don't we have a Pike's Market, for example? And it's like, well, we don't have the population base.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's possible, but I also think that we ultimately have to be grounded in how we take the first steps. And so for us, that means not necessarily advertising it as this huge endeavor, but it's like of course, we have chefs within our community that know that that's possible and request that. And then they can, you know, if the order is above the minimum order size, then they get a 10% discount for coming to pick it up. And, you know, so there's all that stuff. Because obviously, from our standpoint, too, it's like if they're saving us the time and the energy to make the delivery, then, of course, they should be rewarded for that. And so ultimately, our society recognizes most of those rewards monetarily.
People in the bar will buy from you?
Yes. Yeah, for
good.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, because that seems really efficient.
There's a few loyal fans in there, you know, but I also think the other aspect of it, too, to think about is that, okay, so if Feed has a warehouse in there, then it's also very easy for a farm to deliver directly to the chef that's right around the corner.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's baby steps here and there. You know? But yeah, so that, you know, it's also part of it. It's ultimately, it creates more efficiency for them in that regard.
One thing I'm curious about is the trends in food, the trends in produce. In 2000, what was that? 2006, I think it was. You could not buy a Padron. By 2008, you didn't even have to get to the farmer's market early anymore to get Padrons. There were so many of them. Now, everybody wants shishitos. This is the year of the shishito. People, farmers I know, are having trouble selling their Padrons. So are you what sort of trends are you noticing this last year?
Yeah, it's definitely true. And once again, I mean, let's face it, I only have 4 years of evidence as far as my knowledge base goes. So that's fairly limited. But I also, of course, we've witnessed a lot, too. But I would say, too, that a lot of, like you brought up Padron peppers, for instance. Yeah, you know, like you're saying, a handful of years ago, you never heard of them. And now they've been consistently the last few years the highest selling pepper on the list, basically. And a lot of times, too, like, for instance, talking to farms that may have a hard time selling the Padrones and now they wish they had more shishitos, a lot of times I wouldn't necessarily attribute that only to kind of a lack of demand of the Padron pepper in this particular case, but more of an oversupply. So, you know, because obviously if you're farming and you need to pay your bills, I mean,
you're gonna plant
want to plant what you think might not only sell, but also could potentially make you a higher revenue per row foot once again, like we were discussing earlier, because you have to budget in that regard. So I think that that's another aspect that, once again, only 4 years in, we are not necessarily making measurable inroads. But I think that as we develop this kind of transparent food community in these micro regions, then not only can you help pick certain items to grow, you know, together with the chefs and with the farms and with Feed in the at the same table in that conversation. That's kind of been a fun thing that started to happen this year, was we actually are able to coordinate meetings with chefs, farms, and Feed all sitting at the table, same table, which I've been told doesn't necessarily happen a lot.
No, that doesn't happen a lot. So that's great.
Yeah. So, but anyway, the other aspect that we can work on is not only what to grow, but the timing of it. So knowing that in these types of microregions like Sonoma County, where you have these very discernible and ridiculous amount of microclimates, where, you know, nightshades or peppers, tomatoes, that type of stuff, the summer crops might ripen much earlier in the eastern reaches of the county, like with Paul's Produce out in Sonoma Valley or up in Healdsburg.
And the Patch.
Yeah,
also
exactly. And so what we do as a community then is take initial steps to kind of being a little bit more proactive with not only what we grow, but when it's going to be available, and kind of working together with those farms that have those unique microclimates. Because then you can maximize the potential of a farm, and you can also extend the seasonality of items. If you are bringing them to market earlier because they're coming from the eastern reaches of the county, and then, you know, 2 months later when all those folks are frying out, the plants are just fried because they've been producing and they're done, they're ready to go to sleep, then the ones out on the coast or closer to the ocean, all of a sudden, guess what? They're kind of ripening right at that moment. So that's kind of the benefits of living in this type of place when and doing the work to create the food system, is that, once again, all those aspects happen, the extension of the food system.
Do you know what the smallest farm is that you work with?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely work with a couple tiny ones. There's no doubt. I mean, I would say, I mean, yeah, for instance, there's a farm, and I probably won't mention any names just because it's not necessary to a certain extent, but there's folks that have like a half acre and might be growing three things, like an heirloom Romano bean, a green Romano bean, an heirloom yellow Romano bean, and an heirloom Persian cucumber. And they grow those three items, and they grow them ridiculously well. And, you know, of course, they're intercropping and planting different beneficials in between so that it satisfies their own personal food needs, you know, so making a diverse garden per se, and maybe, you know, giving produce to their friends and stuff like that. But as far as like a revenue source, they've focused on these three things that no one else grows and that potentially do fetch a higher price because of the rarity of them. And so it's actually a really – it can be a smart way to develop a farm, especially if you can start working as part of a group, organization where there's many people contributing to that supply and availability and diversity.
Yeah, so maybe half an acre would be about the smallest.
I think so.
What would be the biggest? You can use names. I have every farm on I can get.
No, it's cool. Yeah, the biggest farms that we have generally been working with, I would probably put up there as being, you know, Bloomfield Organics, County Line Harvest, Little Organic Farm, David Little.
Oh, David Little.
Yeah.
I just saw David the other day.
Yeah, and I mean, probably Stan Devoto, even, with his apples, with his different plots. Definitely has that much land. And, you know, even Front Porch now up in Healdsburg is kind of up and coming in that regard as far as like the size of their farm, not up and coming in their wisdom or knowledge, but I mean, just as far as
their size.
Yeah. And their sophistication. They've only been in production for, I think this is their third season. And so, yeah, there's, and as you would expect, knowing that we're at the tip of the iceberg in the food system here, you're going to see growth.
Yeah. You know? Yes.
And so that's all we're trying to do is get ready for it.
Yeah. And we're seeing so many young farmers, which is just such a relief.
Exactly.
I mean, it's like mental Valium.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, yeah, that's the thing. It's the classic storyline, right? Where it's the elder generation has the wisdom and the young kids leave town and go off to the big city or whatever. And that we've gone through a couple generations of that. And, you know, we have developed a culture where that is to a certain extent more appealing. But thankfully, there's artisans out there that also work with those folks searching for that ultimate high, if you will. And they're able to now honor the artisans that are doing the most foundational and fundamental work out there, which is growing food.
Yeah, cool. How about a little bit more music, Mike? We'll be right back.
Live with me. 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 Lost in space, I heard you were lost in space. That's such a lonely place for you to be. Out of control, singing with too much soul. I heard you got out. Gardening again, landscape again, keeping all the grounds around her clean, working for the queen. Out on the ocean floor, what could be stranger than the unknown danger that lies on the ocean floor? Breakers crash on the beach, I count them like lambs in my sleep. They come at me steady, they know I'm not ready. They pound on my mattress door. Have they got a big one in store? I heard I was losing you. That's not the only thing. got to lose. The deep sea blues. Look at these blues. Deep sea blues. Sea blues. Look at these blues. I got the deep sea blues. Live with me.
We are back here on Mouthful. I'm talking with Tim Page of Feed Farmers Exchange of Earthly Delights, based in the Barlow in Sonoma County, wholesale distribution center of very fresh farm produce throughout the North Bay. Are most of your farms located in Sonoma County?
Yes. Let's see. Over the course of the year, we'll probably work with about, you know, we'll work with about 70 farms this year, roughly, helping them sell their food out there. And yeah, I would say of those 70, it's pretty much like 66, 67. I mean, we work with a farm up in Boonville called Filigreen.
And then there's County Line, which is in that mysterious...
Yeah, technically Marin, you know.
Petaluma, but in Marin.
Yeah, exactly. And then Marin Roots in Marin also. And we've done a little bit of work with Jim Leonardis out in Lake County. But yeah, I mean, the vast majority in Sonoma County, for sure. And the vast majority also, you know, west of the ridge between... Santa Rosa and Sonoma. I mean, there's really only been a couple farms that we've worked with out in Sonoma Valley.
West of Sonoma Mountain.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So there's lots of room for growth.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, tremendous potential.
Yeah. So are you starting to see, let's see, what is this? This is, we're in the last part of August.
Crazy.
Crazy. School has started, which is
my kids
criminal.
Go back tomorrow.
Where do they go?
They're just little guys, 5-year old, my son Santi, my 7-year old daughter Raya, and they're just, you know, at the charter school in Sebastopol.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, my grandson started back Wednesday.
Yep.
It's Annalie's first year of high school. Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah.
So we're starting to see that like bursting fecundity. Mm-hmm. That happens
this time of year, for sure.
Yeah. How do you see that? How do you see the seasons ebbing and merging? Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, from our perspective, that's part of the beauty, but also the challenge. You know, because you want to be able to accommodate high season, but then you also have to pay your bills in the low season. Technically, the low season. You know, we talked about that single digit percentage of feeding local food to local people as far as like how much is grown here, and in the wintertime it's even much less than that. And so I mean, there's a very distinct seasonality with regards to the workload. You know, we definitely see it shrink a little bit in the winter.
But are we starting to see things like, say, winter squashes are just starting to come in?
Yeah, sorry, let's bring it back to the plants, right? So we have had some winter squash showing up on the availability list the last couple weeks. You know, some of the basics like the delicata and the acorn and and stuff like that. But it's like definitely this time of year, it's kind of, if anything's going to grow here, this is the time of year when it is here. So yeah, literally being able to have summer squash and winter squash and the majority of fruit where you have stone fruit and
melons
apples
are
and berries
now.
And melons and all that. And yeah, but I think that ultimately when you witness a food system the way ours has evolved, where it went, you know, obviously back in the day, I'm not sure how many years ago, but let's say 100 years ago, the food system was generally more farm-centric, where it was kind of based on what farms were growing.
Exactly.
And where they're growing it. And then obviously, especially most recently, we've developed a food system that has been very consumer-centric. You know, I would like to be able to have my banana in February in Alaska or whatever that might be. So I think that because of that, you do still see, obviously, you'll see winter squash showing up in July just because there is still that ability potentially to, as a farmer, mm-hmm. to make more revenues by having the product out there before everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can see a tremendous lead in. But I think more so than, I mean, yeah, I guess I'm not answering your question totally to what you're
That's
asking,
fine.
But I think that more so than anything else, it's been the nature of the seasons that mm-hmm. we've witnessed the last couple of years, which, and we've been having a lot of conversation about this recently with farms and with mm-hmm. chefs and just in dialogue in general. And that is witnessing that within the seasons, the individual crops are, they might have a really robust initial bursting of yields
mm-hmm.
where you'll see an initial high yield and the flavor and the quality is all there.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the back end of that crop, whereas it would have in maybe a few years ago, it would have extended for, let's say, 3 weeks, just mm-hmm. random crop, you know, a particular apple variety or a stone mm-hmm. fruit variety. Those windows of opportunity to harvest that fruit have shrunk.
That's
so it's almost like a plant is acting as if, I'm stressed out. I got to throw out all this fruit, and then I'm going to go to dormancy and just take care of myself. And it's like it's expressing that in the micro seasonality.
I've noticed that this year, not just with my cats eating more,
yeah.
but I've noticed that with tomatoes. To me, tomatoes right now are tasting more like they tasted last year in October. And I know, say, the Patch in Sonoma, they had tomatoes up until Thanksgiving last year.
Mm-hmm.
But and I remember that before because I've been here a long time, and I know what the droughts are like. Mm-hmm. So we've been in this drought season. And even, you know, we don't know if we're going to get rain this year or not, but it feels like winter is coming on more quickly this year. And I do feel, even some of the melons, I mean, on one hand, melons have really just started, but they're tasting a little mm-hmm. exhausted already.
Well, and I think that what happens is, too, is sometimes plants get tired. And so towards the end mm-hmm. of a season for that plant, mm-hmm. it doesn't may not hold up as mm-hmm. much. But I think also, too, considering the landscape that we view here in Sonoma County, mm-hmm. albeit beautiful and green, of course, being that the landscape is often dominated by vines, by grapevines,
yeah.
Because that fruit, certain varieties, has come even earlier this year than it did
yeah.
last year, you're seeing, if there's fruit that's been harvested, you're going to see all the leaves starting to go golden
mm-hmm.
and turning color. And so
yeah.
that's another aspect, too, simply a potential monocrop situation that dominates a landscape and kind of influences you in a particular manner.
Yeah, and I also know I have several quince trees.
Mm.
I had one and then separated it. And one thing about quince, gophers don't eat the trees.
Nice.
So I have quince trees. And I noticed about, I think it was about 10 days ago, they were kind of gray and about the size maybe of a ping pong ball. Today, they're the size of my fist.
Whoa.
And they just now started, some started to drop off the tree.
Mm-hmm.
So they swelled up. They tripled
yeah.
in size
yeah.
in under a week.
Yeah. I mean, it's just been, and it's kind of, it is. I wouldn't say that early prominence is also consistent either. I mean, mm-hmm. you also have other, it's just always going to depend on the crop. It's always going to depend on the location of the farm or the field that it's being
and
grown
the,
in.
The year.
Yeah. And there's, but because there's also other crops that you might sit and wait and be in anticipation of mm-hmm. where if the heat spike that we had a couple weeks ago, if the timing of it isn't quite right, but it's surrounded by lots of cool nights, like we're already having nights in the high 40s,
yeah,
then ultimately those same summer crops that require heat then all of a sudden get prolonged. It's like this, we have this happening right now with a local farm's crop of corn. You know, it's like corn's been hard to find this year in
yes,
general.
Very hard.
Most likely because of water pressure and all that. But mm-hmm. also, thankfully, we do have some areas, a lot of areas here in Sonoma County that do still have a decent water table underneath them. And
mm-hmm.
so, but still, those farms, you know, it's like, okay, where's that corn? And so ultimately, you have things come quick and disappear. And then mm-hmm. also other things get played out for a longer amount of time because the weather has not been super consistent.
Yeah, and citrus seems all wacky this year.
Mm-hmm.
Friends of mine, my friends who brought me so much, they brought over a big bag of Meyer lemons. They're usually picking their Meyer lemons in November.
Mm-hmm.
And their tree's full.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I just think the world is a little bit stressed out. And,
yeah.
you know, I think as a father of two young kids and kind of just being alive and in this, you know, current period, it's easy to potentially overthink that and get stressed out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like we were talking about earlier, thankfully there's so much work to be done in a good way.
Yeah, that, and it's mostly,
yeah.
I mean, to talk about it is, it's interesting.
Yeah.
Nature is, I think, infinitely interesting.
Yeah.
And how it functions one year based on how it functions another year,
mm-hmm.
I find fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, I can just be totally geeky about that kind of thing for hours.
Yeah.
For hours.
Yeah. Well, one of my favorite parts about nature that is extremely amazing in that regard is how it also, it's like we, and the farm, you know, you view this at the farms, it's like we can put in the work and kind of nurture a crop, let's say, but it's also nature does pull that along as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know it's obvious, but it's, you know, it also becomes very apparent when you're doing this type of work that we do get drawn to a certain extent. Like, I know for a fact, you know, in my past business world experience, that working this many hours and this many days a week that we're doing with feed and mm-hmm. in the food system right now, I couldn't have done it. And so the only way that that we as a group have the energy to do it is because we do feel like we're being drawn by this aspect of life that mm-hmm. that's kind of how life performs. It wants to be abundant when it can. It's always going to be performing at its highest level. Uh-huh. You know, that's just the nature of things.
How many people work at Feed?
Right now we have three, including myself, three guys that are working full time. Mm-hmm. And then we have a crew of, with the rest of the warehouse crew and our drivers, in total 10. There's like another 7 or 8 part-time mm-hmm. folks that come and make it happen. And yeah, it's a devotion. I mean, I'm telling you, no one's coming to Feed because we're all hoping to get rich quick.
Sure,
you know?
Of course not.
Everybody's doing it because we believe in what we're doing and mm-hmm. we can, yeah, once again, it's that continuous chain mm-hmm. for sure. It's like you ask any farm out there and 99.9% of the veggie farmers out there, I have a feeling, aren't doing it because they want to get rich. They're doing it because they believe in what they're doing and they're mm-hmm. passionate about it and they can't imagine doing anything else.
Yeah. And that's one of the, like I said, that's mental Valium. You know, it gives me, you hear all the time on a national level about how many family farms are disappearing every day. And you said something about this a little bit ago when you were saying there's a lot of no's, just focus on the yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I listen to a lot of radio, but say listening to reports on NPR, I've noticed this particularly when it comes to cooking and when it comes to eggs, and sort of taking this overview where I just want to, you know, put cotton in my ears and quit thinking because it seems so overwhelming. And then I think I'm one person. I write for a specific audience in Sonoma County, and I could take every person in Sonoma County and show them where to get eggs from Happy Chickens. And that's managed. And that's why when, you know, I didn't want to go to the New York Times and do what I do.
Yeah.
I don't want to have a radio show that is not, I mean, if people want to listen to me all over the world, right on. But to me, what's inspiring is what is happening, the ground I'm standing in on what things happen here. And it's not just interesting, it's manageable.
Yeah.
You can't save the world, but you can make, I mean, saving the world is a very abstract thing.
Yeah.
But you can make where you are and what you touch and where you spend your money, you can make that better and you can help the people around you make that better.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that I kind of get excited when I hear you talking like that because it makes me think about my own personal experience and that awareness that kind of comes up within all of us when we do make that choice. And I think you can look at indigenous cultures around the world that literally, their society is based on kind of worshiping the ground that they walk on. You know, when you look at a lot of these indigenous cultures, I mean, I have, my personal experience has been in the Hawaiian Islands. And
much of mine as well.
Yeah, and their entire existence was based pretty much like on watershed management and how you celebrated the food that came out of that watershed. And they called it ahupua'a. Mm-hmm. And it was basically how they would create resources or honor resources for every community. So every community had access to the resources from the ocean to the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking down on a volcano, it's like pie-shaped wedges, basically.
Yeah.
And anyway, it's, yeah, when you choose to worship the ground you walk on, I don't think we as a current culture here in the West, I don't think we can even comprehend what that might actually mean. And as far as like, you know, having a society that's addicted to capitalism or money or whatever it might be, it's not like that doesn't create jobs. And that's the whole point for, that's one of our kind of personal missions at Feed too. It's to have the food system be for profit. You know, our business is set up as a for profit with an extreme bent on transparency. And we are evolving the ownership structure of that structure, but it's, everybody needs to pay their bills currently.
Exactly. Everybody needs to pay their bills. Everybody needs dinner. But back to what you said about Hawaii, everything in Hawaii, I mean, Hawaiian spirituality is the spirituality of nature.
Yeah.
It's all, I mean, I study Hawaiian dance, and that's the movement of hula, mm-hmm. reflect the movement of, say, a hula dancer's hips, reflects the movement of the waves. Mm-hmm. A lot of what we dance about might be the rising of the sun or the fresh water, the seawater. Mm-hmm. And lately there's been a Facebook meme going around, and there are various pictures with it, but it says nature. Nature is my religion.
Mm-hmm.
Nature is my religion and outside is my church or something like, you know, yeah. something along those lines.
Yeah.
And I think it's possible to live where we live and have that same sort of deep connection
yeah.
to nature and enjoy it and have it just really enrich our lives. So I love what you're doing.
Uh-huh.
I love that you have this sort of foundation of thoughtfulness about it. It's really a great thing.
Yeah, I think that ultimately kind of what we've discovered and the intention that you would kind of believe in anyway is that when you bring truthful venture to something as foundational as food, you know, air, food, water, it's a foundational element, that it will then affect everything.
Yeah,
basically.
Absolutely. And on that note, take that wisdom and have a wonderful week because we are out of time. You can see Feed Sonoma, just Google Feed Plus Sebastopol, you will get right there and read more about it. Thank you for taking time on a Sunday night to come onto the show, and I'm sure I will see you here again.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you, and you all have a great week. Get to your farmer's market. Go outside and say hi to your plants. Steal a few tomatoes from your neighbor. Sneak some zucchini onto their porch, and meet me back here next week for another episode of Mouthful Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming here on KRCB FM Radio 91.
Grapes are covering the grassland. They're buying up for family farms. They're selling out. Who can blame them? Wine's a cash crop growing strong. And in the fields of Pendleton Valley, buildings sprout up like new sown seeds. Now they call it Telecom Central. This is what consumers need. I am the hand that rocks the cradle. I am the voice that sings their song. I am the one for local color, salt of the earth, but not for long. Take a look, 'cause I'll go. The gamblers in this brand new chorus, and moving in this land once open and free. Well, they got pictures in the museum of local color that used to be.